Blog Talk Radio.
Analytic and holistic approaches to fine art education, a comparative approach.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Now a brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you.
Well, good evening. Good evening, everyone. And welcome again to Booker T. Washington African American Family Room Forum. We're certainly happy that you've taken time out from your probably busy holiday weekend activities to join us tonight. And we certainly hope that those of you who are listening via the internet will call in and participate in our discussion this evening. I'll announce the topic in just a few minutes, but I want to give the number to those of you who would like to listen and talk. So the number is 657-383-0671, and I do plan to repeat it in a few minutes. But first, I want to welcome my co-host and ask for a radio check. Ms. Bianchi, are you able to hear me okay?
Santi Fauna, yes, I am.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. I also want to welcome Brother Warren and Sheikh John Kenan Bey. We hope to have others join us in a little while. But I do want to also let those of you know, those of you who are listening via the internet, I'd like for you to be aware that we want your participation. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Even though I will announce the topic in just a moment, you can call in and bring up any subject that you would like to talk about and have us discuss. So we aren't restricted to just talking about the topic that I will announce in just a minute, because this is a free forum for us in our African-American family room to talk about things that concern our African-American community life. And so if there's something that you feel passionately about or that you just want to get opinions concerning, feel free to call in and bring up the topic, and we'll be happy to discuss it with you. Now, I've taken time this week, throughout the week, to troll the news as I used to do each week to see if there are any significant issues that are in the news that might make for a good panel discussion. And the only thing that I see that keeps coming up that's of particular interest to me as far as African-American affairs is concerned is this critical race theory issue. We've talked about that on several shows, so we can talk about it, but I don't really want to start the show off with that. There's a lot of back and forth going on now, and I think it's really been overplayed as a political football, and I don't see any reason for us to take time unless somebody wants to do it to cover that. But one thing that did come up that I feel might be worthy of a conversation, even if it's just a brief back and forth, is the question that I'm going to pose right now. Is the deployment of 3,000 National Guard soldiers from several states to perform non-law enforcement duties, assisting the U.S. Border Patrol at the Texas border with Mexico, going to stem illegal border crossings or improve legal entry processing? Or is it just a political stunt that is wasting state taxpayers' money? Now, I was informed before the show that in one case, I think it's Ohio, a billionaire, is going to donate $1 million to help pay for that state's National Guard. And, that's an exception to the rule, because usually, unless the National Guard is federalized or unless they're using a certain amount of federal-supported training funds, that if they actually do duties, they are actually paid through the state treasury. So in this particular case, from all I've been able to determine, the Department of Defense has not provided funding for these troops to go down there for this department. Now, back in the beginning of last month, I believe that one of the states did go down there for a very short training exercise, and they might have received some federal support for that. But this is supposed to be at least a 90-day deployment of these National Guard troops. But from what I read, they're not supposed to be performing law enforcement activities. In other words, they're not supposed to be arresting people that they see trying to sneak into the country. So I don't know exactly what they're going to be doing, but they are supposed to be down there for at least 90 days to support the Border Patrol, the U.S. Border Patrol, and also the Texas Border Patrol. So the question is, and this is actually just a matter of speculation and opinion. We won't know until some data is collected after the event has passed. But is it going to actually stem illegal border protection, border crosses rather, having these non-law enforcement, National Guard soldiers down there on the border? Or is it even going to help improve legal entry processing? Because first of all, these people would have to be trained up to do whatever is required in the legal entry processing activities. So it may be all for a very good purpose, and it may work out very well. It may be something that the U.S. government may decide to support. And even since they've got all of these troops coming back from Afghanistan, many of them have returned already, might give them something to do rather than sitting around in the garrison and waiting for another mission. So it might be good. I don't know. I know something needs to be done down there at that border. And maybe this might be something that will help. But on the other side of the coin, and I'll turn it over to my co-host just a second for his comments. You know, sometimes, you know, I see some things like this happening, I wonder if it's not just politics. Because there have been some outcries from a number of state governors that are involved, saying that the Biden administration has turned things backwards in terms of controlling the flow of illegal immigrants, illegal aliens from the Central America. And now, this is one way of making the Democratic administration look bad to maybe enhance the chances of retaking the House and the Senate in 2022. So look at all these things. But, Ms. Piaggi, what do you think?
Well, they have a right to do that. That's the federal government's responsibility to protect the national borders. States can protect their borders. The 50 states that make up the United States are a sovereign, basically sovereign countries, and they have a right according to the 10th, well, even before that, the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution. But they have a right to protect their borders. And what they should do is do exactly that. They should control the flow of illegals that's entering into these states and send a message to the federal government that you are not doing your job. And you have to control your borders, especially in times like we have today when you have traveling terrorists. You have terrorists that's being sponsored around the world. You see terrorist activity that's going in other countries. You have terrorist activity that has occurred down in South America. You have terrorist activities that's being sponsored in my favorite nation, one of my favorite nations in the northern area of Nigeria. From the weapon cache that was seized with the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya, and weapon caches worked their way on down into Tuareg in Mali. And on across, and they've been turned up in northern Nigeria. And it'll only be a matter of time when they end up elsewhere. So, no, you have to be able to protect your borders. Zimbabwe and Zambia put fences up between them, those nations that have squabbles, and they protect their borders. And that's been going on since ages. And there were some things I wanted to talk about, if you don't mind, being that we're coming up upon the 4th of July. And we talk about blacks that's not mentioned in the history making of the United States. Now, when I was coming up, we learned about this. And I'm sure that you know about the participation in the United States military. And I don't know if you ever studied about the females that flew with the Tuskegee Airmen, the black females that flew with the Tuskegee Airmen. Their stories are not told as much as they should be. But my hat goes off to the 92nd Infantry Division, which consists of about 715,000 men, by the way. And then you had the 365th, the 370th, the 371st Combat Battalions. You had the 761st, which was George S. Patton, which is one of my favorite generals. That black tank battalion, regiment that is, fought with George Patton. And he told them, don't let your country down and don't let me down. George Patton was something else. He's one of the greatest military leaders that this country has ever produced and can be right up there with the world. He had the 758. You had the 784. One of the internment camps where Jewish was being killed, I believe it was Dachau. I believe it was either the 761st or the 784 that went into that internment. And Fred, the Jewish that was about to be exterminated. It's a story that's not told. There's a lot of stories that's not told. It should be. I guess there's not enough room in an 8-hour day in your public schools. But they are told at the grassroots levels, I know for sure. Not all. And they're good stories. You learn from them. And you see the humanity in people. People have a tendency, just like any other life form, to do good, that's considered, and to do bad, that's considered. That's human being, that's life. Thank you, Mr. Washington. And did you know about those battalions and those regiments? You a military man.
I was aware of some of them, not all of them, but you're right. They had a very significant role. They were underutilized in some cases, but then again, they performed heroically where they were utilized. Unfortunately, many of those soldiers that were trained and basically trained to fight as combat soldiers were not allowed until the commands got in a real tight jam to actually fight as infantry soldiers or artillery soldiers, but they did well. And I'm proud to say that my father was one of the fortunate ones because he was trained as a combat fighter pilot, and he did deploy to Italy with the 332nd Fighter Group under the command of General, at that time, Lieutenant Colonel, and later Colonel, and later General, Benjamin O. Davis. And so that's part of my personal legacy, being the son of one of those famous Tuskegee Airmen, as they are called now. But
I wonder if your father had an opportunity to go to one of the blacks-only pubs that was in England, the English town called Bamber Bridge. It was in Lancashire.
Yeah.
That had a lot of history to it.
Yeah. I don't think my dad actually went anywhere but to Italy. His unit departed the United States in January of 1944 aboard a troop ship, and they went straight to Italy. And after the war was over, they came back. I don't think they ever went up in that northern part of Europe or to England. So, no, I don't think he did. But I do want to take advantage of the opportunity right now to welcome Dr. Nobles, who just joined us, and we'll be going around the room and reintroducing everyone and also calling on everyone to make initial comments. But right now, I want to let our internet audience know the phone number to call in, because I do encourage you all who are listening via the internet to dial in and let us hear your opinions. As I said before, you can comment on the topic that I will re-announce in just a second, but you can talk about anything else if you have something on your mind you would like to speak about, and if you would like to get our responses to it, then just put it out there, and I'll be one that would like to hear you, and I will respond. I don't know all the answers, and my response may not be comprehensive or complete, but at least I'll take a stab at trying to answer any questions you ask me, but I'm sure our other panelists are the same way. So the number to call is 657-383-0671. Okay, so I'm going to repeat the topic that I began the show with. We don't have to stay on this topic. If you want to bypass the topic and talk about something else, that's fine too. But the topic that I began with is a question. Is the deployment of 3,000 National Guard soldiers from several states to perform non-law enforcement duties, assisting the U.S. Border Patrol at the Texas border with Mexico, going to stem illegal border crossings and improve legal entry processing, or is it just a political stunt that is wasting state taxpayers' money? So we're going to go around the table now. And the next one, as we go around the family room, is Brother Warren. Brother Warren, good evening. Welcome to the show. Happy 4th of July weekend. And what do you think?
Well, happy 4th of July. I have a house full. I got my children in town, and I had to steal away here in my little study here to participate in the show. On your topic, I just want to say that, you know, there was a movie called Harper Valley PTA. It's supposed to be based on a true story about this school board who, I forget now, I don't know if it was the PTA or the school board. They were hard on this woman. This woman, if I'm not mistaken, ran a brothel or something. But each of these people who were hard on her were all hypocrites. They were whoremongers themselves, or they did immoral stuff themselves. Now, when we look at the border, we have people, we have corporate entities, good old American red, white, and blue corporate entities benefiting from the labor, the cheap labor of undocumented migrants. And the causes of much of the turmoil and confusion in the countries in Central America, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, is a result of U.S. policies in those countries, U.S. backing rebel groups to overthrow a government the U.S. feels had been communist or something like that, the relationship of the U.S. smuggling guns to these rebel groups, and then these guns and these rebel groups turn out to be gangs later on that intimidate the people. So it's a very complex story. And yeah, a lot of this is public relations and just a stunt, but they are very wealthy people who are also at the same time they're donors to conservative, Republican, or Democrat, liberal campaigns. They are benefiting. Just look at all these meatpacking plants in places like Idaho and all, or Iowa and these places, and they benefit from this cheap labor. So that's basically what I want to say on that. There was talk of military history. I am proud of the fact that I am a descendant of black people who participated in the War 1812, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II. I could tell you one of the first persons in the New Orleans area killed during the Vietnam War was a cousin of mine. That was a news story. He was one of the first persons in New Orleans area to be killed. One of my grandmother's brothers was a Harlem Hellfighter. He died in World War I. We only recently learned that he was interned at Arlington Cemetery. When I looked that up, he was one of the ones killed right there in France at one of the battles. And his body, he was buried there in France. And then they interred his body in 1921, I think, in Arlington Cemetery. One of my great-great-grandfathers fought in the Civil War for the Navy. He was on his way. I have his pension file. I have a copy of his 100-and-some-page pension file. He was trying to walk to enlist in the Army, and as he was walking along the levee, they had Union gunboats shooting from the river. At the plantations on the other side, he gets hit in the head. He falls in the water. A Union gunboat picks him up, and that's how he joins the Navy. My grandmother, my father's mother, who's from Santiago, Cuba, her father fought in the War of Independence for Cuba against Spain. So I have a deep military history. I've never served in the military myself, but I have people in my family who served in the military. And the last point that's been pressing me this week, I am really tired of the hostage, the Black Freedom Movement, as we call it, the mainstream Black spokesperson who represent the interests of Black people, to me are held hostage by the LGBTQ industrial complex and their overlapping groups like the Me Too feminist movement, who are their partners in crime. It's as if all of the Black commentators, the Black scholars, the Black journalists are now all pushing the same talking points. And many Black people are getting sick and tired of it. The OJ situation, I'm not the OJ, the Bill Cosby situation, many of these Black spokespersons on these networks and in these conversations have kept the talking point where they refer to Bill Cosby as a predator and they attack Felicia Rashad. But, you know, this talking point doesn't direct the same venom at white males who are alleged or have been found guilty of doing the same thing. For example, when we look at the music industry and entertainment industry, and even the pornography industry, where Black women are objectified, Black women are sexualized, over-sexualized, you don't hear these same people attacking it. And so Bill Cosby, being a Black male who happens to be wealthy, is the recipient of a special type of venom and scorn that's being directed at him. And many of these Black people, let's face it, the LGBT community complex, I call it the LGBTQ industrial complex, have invested a lot of money, and these Black people are basically hustling for the money, even in our institutions like some of the HBCUs. And so they're using these Black people to push and test the waters. So when there's a snapback from the community, the gay whites pretend like they're not involved. And so what I'm asking now, I'm asking for the Black gays to split from the LGBTQ community, create your own group called the BGLQA, Black Gays and Lesbians and Queers of America, and challenge the racist white gays, because they are using this group of people to, during the protest, they said during the George Floyd protest, some Black people said they would all of a sudden, when they turn the corner, they'll see a pile of bricks already conveniently placed there, as if they were being encouraged to break windows and so on and so forth. And what I see the LGBTQ community doing, they're placing metaphorical bricks for Black gays to pick up and slam the Black community. And on those bricks, in my imagination, they got all the little letters painted on those bricks. And so we have to address this. I'm proud of Judge Joe Brown and how he addressed Mark Lamont Hill. That's one of these type of black journalists who he said he schooled him. And I'm glad Felicia Rashad took a stand. Of course, she apologized, you know, all that. So I just want to bring those things up there. So the border situation is they are elements of powerful organizations and people who benefit. You'll be surprised how many of these conservative, Republican, wealthy people have undocumented labor working in their houses or in their gardens or on their estates or on their businesses, you know. And so we have to understand the contradiction, the doublespeak that we live under in this country there. I will say as African-American people, because we do have a lot of influence, we do have money flowing among our hands, we have just been negligent in forming organizations and entities among ourselves to lift ourselves up. I don't personally think that's anything to worry about immediately, because I do believe there's an ideal to replace us. I do believe that there are elements of white power, whether conservative or liberal, who are saying, look, we're tired of these black people. Let's get some other people in here and replace them. And we might even get them to register to vote. I do believe that's part of a strategy. But, you know, in this day and age, everything's being used as a political point, whether it's critical race theory, whether it's this or that. Every side is trying to find something to use as a campaign talking point to get the edge over the other candidate. And so that's what I have to say at this point.
Okay, thanks so much, Brother Warren. Thank you. We also want to welcome Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, who just joined us, and we'll be getting back to you in just a few minutes, Minister Jesus, as we go around the family room. And we want to also welcome Sister Stephanie, my dearly beloved sister-in-law, who just joined us. And I want to go ahead and, for the benefit of Minister Jesus and Sister Stephanie, announce the topic that we began the show with. And as I had said earlier, we don't have to stay on that topic. You don't have to respond to this topic question if you prefer to talk about something else. Before I do that, I want to repeat the number for those internet listeners. So if you who are listening via the internet now would like to call in and let your voice and your opinion be heard, the number to call is 657-383-0671. So the topic that we began the show with tonight is this question. Is the deployment of 3,000 National Guard soldiers from several states to perform non-law enforcement duties assisting the U.S. Border Patrol at the Texas border with Mexico going to stem illegal border crossings and improve legal entry processing, or is it just a political stunt that is wasting state taxpayers' money? So going around the virtual family room at this time, we want to go ahead, and our next person as we go around the room to speak is Sheikh John Kenan Bey. Welcome again to the show, Sheikh John Kenan Bey, and what are your thoughts?
First of all, I'd like to say good afternoon to everyone. And as I listen to this situation with the National Guard, what goes into my mind is a question of states' rights. That being said, this issue has a long history. I was just recently reviewing some information, activity of the Civil War, prior to the Civil War, particularly the period of 1861 to 1863. And when Abraham Lincoln was elected in 1860, it was a short period of time before the opposition organized in a way that they was ready to take it to the battlefield. So, and that occurred very quickly. I'm seeing some of the same issues and response to the issues being, you know, raised again. I think the South, they said that the planters or the plantation owners were rich, had a lot of money, based on cotton and the way it was structured, they was kind of selfish. They could have passed more money down to the people who help make that cotton industry productive, but they chose not to. But that being said, it seemed they miscalculated in their calculation. And after they miscalculated, the Southern economic political structure was disintegrated. But it seemed like maybe they have regrouped and they might think they have a better chance of achieving the objective of separating to a country of their own, that they can do anything they want to and not be concerned about the interests of other groups of people. I think the final analysis is that these issues should be taken up in the homeland of the people that was actually dissatisfied with what's going on in the Constitution of the United States of America, which was designed for all national groups, you know, humanity in general, male, female, you know, all of that. And that being said is that I'm not sure where a lot of these people came from, particularly European, that the activity that the behavior that they're taking on would be accepted in the country that they came from in Europe. But that they sort of dodged the bullet of being sent back to Europe after they lost the Civil War, and because what they voluntarily succeeded from this country. And once they succeeded, there has to be a process of bringing them back in or not bringing them back in. So if not bringing them back in, the choice they have would be have to go back to the country of origin. But it was policies put in place and laws that allowed them to come back in, which was the 14th and 15th Amendment. And I would say they should be very, very grateful. But for some reason, we seem like there's a second attempt to do that. And now we, when I said we talking about descendants of African, why should that concern us, our role in what took place? Well, one is that we being the type of people we are, when I said the type of people we are, as far as from a humanity point of view, we stood on the sideline, not stood on the sideline, but we kind of helped the Southerner from being having a worse defeat than they did, because in the battles, they draw from a pool of men that was part of helping to sustain the slave system. And while they went away for war, the slaves, to an extent, because of the humanity, is took care of their help with their wounded, the sick, and their women, things of that nature. So I guess what I'm saying is that this effort being made is anti-democratic, and it's not in harmony with the Constitution of the United States of America. And I think the sooner we all realize why this government, this country is put together, and obey it, live up to it, and try to have peace and harmony in this land. Until then, I think the option for the Creator, it seems like, is that it's been prophesied before the end of time. Every man must return back to his homeland. I think the European be better off more back in his homeland if he doesn't want to live in a land with other nations or other nationalities. So in general, that's just my thoughts on what's taking place. Peace.
Thank you very much, J. John Kennedy. And we're moving around the family room, and I want to again welcome Dr. Calvin Nobles as we proceed with the forum. And Dr. Nobles, you've heard the question that was asked at the beginning of the show. And of course, as I mentioned, if you don't want to address that and you want to address something else that's of concern to you, that's perfectly fine. But I have, some interest in hearing your opinion as a retired military officer, just to get some idea what you think about the deployment of these National Guard soldiers going down to the border. So welcome again, Dr. Novus, and what are your thoughts?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you. I'm glad to be on the line tonight. So my thoughts, so I think it's the right thing to do to get the National Guard troops down to the border, even though they're going down there in a support capacity, not in a law enforcement capacity. In fact, I'm not even sure they're in a Title 10 capacity, meaning in an official military capacity to conduct operation, kinetic operations. I believe they're going to be on some extended orders where they're acting under 32, where 30, under Title 32, that is, where the Secretary of Defense can put them under a National Guard leader, probably in the state of, most likely in the state of Texas. And so I think it's the right thing to do. I'd rather see National Guardsmen mobilized in this country rather than see the active duty troops deployed, because active duty troops typically come with a whole lot of kinetic force with them. And so being that we've been in heavy combat and major combat operations in Afghanistan and Iraq for well over a decade, I would like to see those troops remain in garrison and we go through retraining based on what we see the modern and the more urban combat operations that we're going to be dealing with in the future. I think one of the questions that we really have to ask is, we know that Homeland Security and we know that State Department are critically involved in what's going on at the border, but this is really an interagency issue. And my concern is, I would like to see or know what military operations, for instance, the U.S. Northern Command is the commanding general or commanding admiral in charge of military operations or the military forces in the United States. So I would like to see what their plans are in terms of border security, because military operations can support civilian operations, especially in terms of interagency operations. And with what we have going on down in the border and down in Texas, it's critical. And it's just not in Texas, also the border in California worries me too, because we all know that the Canadian borders are shut at this time. Now, there are some concerns saying that they were getting ready to open up their borders again. When they open up their borders, this problem is going to come a lot more profound, because now you're going to have people trying to get in this country illegally from all entrances into the United States. And so the problem we're seeing now at the southern border is going to be magnified, because now you're going to have people trying to come down through Canada like we saw during 9/11, and that's going to be a problem. But the long pole in the tent right now is the southern border down in Texas, because I saw something the other day where, you know, the number of people that are coming across has really been, it's almost exponentially climbed. And, I mean, we really need to do something about that. And we just can't continue to take in, you know, people in and providing with benefits and everything else, because eventually it's going to take a toll on us financially. It's already taking a toll on us financially. We're still sorting out problems with border issues from 10 years ago. And so we really need to have a hard stance on that. And I really appreciate the fact that we are getting the National Guardsmen down there. And in fact, when we talking about the National Guardsmen going down to Texas, you know, my other concern is, are we getting, like, intelligence analysts, or what type of people are they sending down there, and what are they going to be doing? Because they're not going to be in a law enforcement role. Now, they can be in a law enforcement role, and they can be granted Title 18, where military forces are granted law enforcement authorities, but that's much more complicated to grant in the United States, and it's much more likely that it's not going to be granted, but it can be granted if necessary. And so these type of operations are never easy. That they're never, you know, just, you know, very, you know, smooth. There's always a lot going on with them, you know, and it's concerning to me is that, you know, Texas is one of the largest states. I'm sure they got the largest National Guard. So to me, you know, I know they're feeling the blunt of it too, but this is really a national level issue, and to be honest, it should be an international level issue, because we talk, you know, people migrating from not just one or two countries. These people are coming up from several countries in South America and and so in Central America. So we got to take that into account, and it's really taking a toll on us. So we do need better foreign policy, international policy around this, and it's really going to be left up to this administration to really put something on the plate that's going to be really solid and hardcore with some teeth that we can get this problem worked out. We can't keep passing this on from one administration to the other because, as we can see, we got a bottleneck now, and that bottleneck eventually is going to cause some things to fall. And so we really got to, you know, support this administration, you know, rattle Congress and get them involved. I know that's difficult at times, but, you know, it's just we just keep passing the buck on this. And this is not something, we got other important matters to be dealing with than talking about border issues right now. So, again, I just think this is a hard problem, and I think that it's going to take the administration working not just with the interagency of the United States, but also working, you know, unilaterally with other countries, especially Mexico, getting them involved and holding them accountable, holding ourselves accountable, and really trying to bring this problem to an end. I don't think it's going to be solved overnight, but we can't keep passing this on and on and on to the next administration. That's not a fix for this problem. And I close with that.
Well, Rory, thank you very much. Thank you so much, Dr. Novus. And we're going to move around. I don't know how much past 9 o'clock we'll go tonight because it is a holiday weekend. I know you have other activities planned. Some of you do anyway. But we definitely want to make sure everyone has full opportunity to voice your thoughts. And so we're going to go next to Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali and then to Sister Stephanie. So welcome again, Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali. And you've heard the topic announced a couple of times. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I give the greeting of peace from paradise. Assalamu alaikum to all those who recognize that greeting. And thank you for allowing me to be on the program. I'm honored to be on the program with such a distinguished panel and individuals with such a level of academia, insight, credentialed opinions. I lived in Mexico for a couple of years. I speak Spanish fluently. Could you speak a little bit louder? Is the reception better now?
A little bit better. If you could make it a little louder, it'd be a lot easier because the first was almost impossible to hear. Yes, a little bit better now, though.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll be remain cognizant and conscious of that issue. What I was saying is I lived in Mexico for a couple of years. I actually married down there. I speak the language relatively fluent. In that language, I'm somewhat familiar with that area. I want to first, since the issue has to do with the border, America has 1,400 miles of exposed border. The Mexican government has no military other than the National Guard to fight any foreign invaders, if you want to use that word. So they, you know, being at America's back door, they're confident that if there was anyone who sought to compromise their back door, being, you know, Mexico, then America would certainly come to their defense. But President Putin, about a year ago or so, about 2 years now, which, at least a year, he made a statement to former President Trump because there was some question about Russia's activity in the Balkans. And he said, President Putin said, all I have to do is arm your neighbors to the south. I mean, the way he put it, it didn't sound like it would take a lot of convincing to do. these issues are highly complex. The economy, Mexico's economy. I mean, when you walk across the border, and there's a whole enclave of Americans who are living just on the other side of the border, you know, who are drawing down their Social Security. And as a matter of fact, there is a recent report saying that as far as individuals who are depending solely on their Social Security, Mexico is being touted by as being one of the best places to retire, because you can go to a produce market and with $10 American and buy $140 worth of groceries. So I mean, this disparity as it applies to the world. Matter of fact, Detroit, that was one of the issues in 2003 when I relocated here in Detroit out of Chicago. That the governor then, Gran Holm, who is now, she is the energy czar for President Biden, but she was saying then that she could not compete with the $1 an hour jobs being offered down in Mexico. Even Oprah Winfrey, before she went off the air, she interviewed a man who was working for Motorola making cell phones, and he was a supervisor making $14 an hour. There's 130 companies that have relocated on the border to take advantage of the labor issue. I say the cheap labor and the short distance rather than bring it all the way from China. Okay, so the guy who was being who was a supervisor, he's going, you know, Motorola was opening up one of the facilities down on the border, and he was saying that his counterpart was going to make a whole dollar. Now that doesn't include labor packages that accompany individuals who are employed in this country. Okay, overtime, pension funds, and he's going to make a whole dollar. Okay, so as he's in a book called, matter of fact, President Obama was presented with that book. I think he went down to one of the South American countries, and he was presented with that book, and it says that America, living off of the bread of the Hispanic people. Okay, I mean, one of the things the former president did, and that's one of the things that I think really made him feel so, that he, especially in Detroit, that he felt that he had an entitlement to having won the vote in Michigan, but he lost the vote in Michigan. Anyway, we don't want to get into that discussion, but primarily, before he even took the office, oath of office, Ford Motors, they were talking about putting another facility down in Mexico, which is going to cost $1.6 billion. The last one Ford put in was back in 1988. Okay, $1.4 billion with a $14 U.S. Variant. You're talking about a facility that's going to be worth about $20 billion. And Trump said, in order for a company to put a facility in a foreign country, they have to go to Washington, D.C. and get something they call a war bind. So he immediately entered into negotiation once he had won the electoral colleges and was certified that he was going to be next president. He told those people they are not going to receive a war binder, okay? So they immediately withdrew that that bid to put that $1.6 billion facility. And one of the things he said 10 days before the election was that Mexico is going to become the biggest automaker in the world. And just like when President Obama, he bailed out the auto unions and Wall Street, seeing the auto industry as being one of the principal drivers of America's economy. So So I'm saying these are things that hit right at the very heart of the American economy. So so we cannot look at them as a trifle. You know, Brother Warren was mentioning some of his family members who served in the military. I would say this. My grandfather on my mother's side, my grandfather on my father's side, as everyone knows, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, him and several hundred others of a like mind set, they served the entire 5 years at Meyerings, Michigan, in prison. Okay, they sat that war out. But I, on my mother's side, my grandfather, who looked like, if you saw his picture, like Filipino, he's from my mother's side there, from New Orleans, and he served in the Philippines. Okay, and my mother's her brother, just younger than her, he said was in Korea. He designed bridges. So I'm just saying, just to speak to that particular issue. But I myself, as Brother Warren said, he has not served, but I myself, you know, I received a conscience objector in Vietnam, during the Vietnam era. But you know, we have to look at this situation. Now, this president we have, there's two things here that are quite glaring. This president is a Catholic, okay, and this migration, you know, coming from out of Central America through Mexico, and they're trying to stop these countries before they even get to them, you know, at their borders. Not even Ms. Kamala Harris, the vice president, she went down. She spoke to that issue, telling people, don't come, don't try it, don't come, you know, keep trying to, you know, tell them. Whereas America's borders were previously considered to be open for, you know, all the Europeans, especially, all right, that is an issue of, you know, it's like Trump being, President Trump being a Baptist. You know, I spent 2 years ago, I spent 2 years prior to that, right during the election, during the period when President Trump was brought to presidency. You know, I spent it in Louisiana, in northern Louisiana. But nevertheless, you know, Baptist, being a Baptist, you know what I mean, it's almost, you know, like, you know, I heard one Caucasian guy in a gun shop who was talking to about this. He said, we have to believe in something. In other words, the fact that he was a Baptist, okay, that some kind of way provided some type of a credential, you know what I mean? And in Southerners, you know, their mindset is, I remember talking to a guy who was the parish tax collector, and I was telling him about how, you know, the Saudis in 1930 Rockefeller put an ocean of oil at America's disposal.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. The show should have been over already. Some of us didn't get to speak yet.
Okay. So I was telling him that, why do you think that the American dollar is called a greenback? He said, we don't know what those Yankees are doing up there. Okay, so anyway, you have, you know, Caucasian Arabs settling in this country, and you got to understand, they're one of the biggest port cities in the world, in Dubai. That's what provides these goods that are made in China and brought in, dollar stores, Dollar Trees, and things like that, in order to hold down inflation. But these Caucasian Arabs, you know, they're disciplined. And they got to remember something. They do not believe in what is called hiding behind the cross. Okay? They don't believe in backsliding and this man, a man who died and paid for the sins of all mankind. I mean, they don't believe in that. Okay? They're Caucasian. They believe, you know, and when they come over here and listen to some of the lyrics and some of the our music, you know what I mean? They're taught, even in their, in coming up, repatriated in this country, you know, they are being taught that we are a morally, you know, ugly people, okay, and they're just like this brother was, brother Warren was talking about, when it comes to GBQ, you know, just think that, I mean, I have my oldest son is, my oldest son is 52 years old, so I have
Marshall, I'm going to go ahead and hang up, because some conversations ain't going to ever end. I'll see you all next week. Thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you.
Have a happy holiday, Stephanie.
Yes, ma'am, Stephanie. Yeah, the GBQ, I mean, this whole thing, I mean, I tell my children, I say, you know, man was given freedom of will. That means, you know, the gates of heaven and the gates of hell are open to you in terms of if you believe in concepts like that. But the thing is that I say, they use these words like old school. I say, look here, this stuff that they're presenting, this morally reprehensible, you know, conduct, there are statues in India depicting all kinds, all forms of perversion when it comes to, you know, I mean, even in, you know, I mean, so that, you know, that does not curry favor, you know, for us, you know, to embrace those, that lifestyle, okay, it doesn't, you know, doesn't. What used to be something they called the moral majority, okay, you know, church-based. There's a lot of... Yes, sir.
Brother Jesus. Brother
yes,
Jesus.
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you if we can go ahead and wrap up. I had planned to wrap the show up at 9 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
Tonight, because it's a holiday and it's 9 o'clock now. But we want to thank you, you know, for the extensive comment that you made. Because we did just lose two of the participants, Ms. Piatti and Stephanie, I guess, you know, because they had other things on the schedule. And actually, I hadn't planned to go more than an hour tonight, but I do want to do this just in case anyone wants to make a quick closing comment. I want to go ahead and ask Brother Warren and Sheikh John Kenan Bay and Dr. Nobles if they want to make a quick closing comment. So if you could wrap up. I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a thought, so if you could wrap up, you know, your comment and let me go ahead and bring on the remaining participants, and then we can close the show out. So continue, but understand that I'm really wanting to close the show out by 9, and we're after that 9 o'clock. Yeah, be hit, but be aware of the fact that Brother Warren and Sheikh John Kenan Bay and Dr. Nobles, that they do want to say something probably before we close. So go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I'll give it 2 minutes. I should be able to do that. This is the first president who ever acknowledged systemic racism. I mean, here we are, states can have 14% of the population and we control 2% of the wealth. He is the first president to acknowledge systemic racism. We're the biggest consumers. You know what I mean? America has exported its labor base to China, to India, to Mexico. You know, all of this is a part. I can only be seen as a part of. You can't undercut these people's prices. You know, that's where you know mom and pop stores. You know, you can go and buy stuff from Dollar Tree and sell it almost twice as much. There's no way possible for you to be able to compete with those prices. You know what I mean? There's no way possible. Such a disparity. I mean, 10% of the 1% control 99% of the money. That could not happen by accident. And on that note, this is a capitalistic country, and if we cannot talk about money, then we are out of the loop, period. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you for indulging me with your time.
Thank you, Sheikh. Thank you, Brother Minister John, Jesus Muhammad Ali. Thank you so much. And so now back to Brother Warren for any closing comments that you might want to make, please.
As far as reiterate my point on the topic, I just think that this the border situation, there's a lot of politics and the people in power benefit from a lot of the undocumented people coming over because they use them as cheap labor in all types of sectors of the American economy. And that's my statement on that. And I also added, I think we need to have more conversations about the ways in which black males have been and are being emasculated in the place of America from the time of enslavement to even now. And I identify the power of the LGBTQ industrial complex, that's what I call it, and overlapping groups such as the Me Too movement, which is another face for the feminist movement, and how black people are co-opted into these entities and paid lucratively to go back to the black community and to attack it and to impose these values in the black community. And so when there's a blowback from black males against these things, the whites who are behind it, it looks like they're nowhere around. And then you're stuck with the black journalists, the black professors who are writing books about racism. All of these people have the same talking points. And black males are demonized, even at the same time they may use the talk of black males being attacked by the police, but they also come right back and try to demonize black males, and we need to talk about that. And there's another topic that goes along with that, too, the masculinizing of black females is also an observation. So I just want to throw those things in for us to kind of focus on as things become more tightly pressured and a sort of rigid set of rules are being put in place to confuse people tremendously on this level. And so whereby we have young people who are being confused, the adults are also being confused at the same time. I just read today that Disney World will no longer be saying ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's going to be more gender language inclusive. And I think you have schools where you're not to say to the kids, you're mom and dad and this whole type of thing. So that's not only confusing for the children, it's getting confused for adults as well. But it's an imposition from the outside. And we have people who are like missionaries in our community pushing it and kind of tell us how we should think about Bill Cosby and all this kind of stuff. So I just think that's something to be concerned about. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Warren. And so we want to have comments from Sheikh John Kevin Bay and Dr. Noah, and we're going to wrap up with this evening. So Sheikh John Kevin Bay, we'd like to hear from you if you have any final comments.
The only thing I have to say, I'm pleased at the conversation being opening up more to include more people and issues that our players are affected by what's going on in the political arena. So some of the way the media disseminate information to the public, sometimes it puts us into a narrow-minded aspect of what's going on. So, again, I'm pleased to hear the responses of various participants in this forum. Peace.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Sheikh John Kenner Bay. For our final comments for tonight, we turn to the Honorable Dr. Calvin Novus. And Dr. Novus, again, thank you for being on the show tonight. We always appreciate your wisdom and your comments. And if you would like to make any closing comments, please go right ahead.
Hey, Brother Calvin, thank you. I know tonight time is of essence, so I will reserve making any comments at this time. But again, great commentary, great discussions, and I look forward to next week.
All right. Well, thank you all. Thank everyone who listened via the Internet. Again, we hope that you'll join us again on next Saturday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And please be aware that we would love to hear any comments and any opinions that you might want to share with us. So the number to call is 657-383-0671. So for all who are on our panel tonight, again, we appreciate your comments. We thank you for joining us. And we close now wishing everyone a happy and safe 4th of July. Keep in mind that even though it hasn't really been seen yet, there are predictions that this weekend may bring about a surge in COVID-19 infections, including the Delta variant. So still be careful. Still use whatever precautions that you feel are necessary to protect the health of you and your families. And I know for a fact that I'm going to decline going to an activity that I would love to go to. I won't name the group that's having it, but it's a group that Brother Calvin and I are familiar with that's very close to my heart. I'm having a big birthday celebration for one of the members on tomorrow. But I don't know if all of those members have been vaccinated yet. And I'm not going to go around there and say I need to see everybody's vaccination card. But because I don't know the situation I'm going to be in, and I don't want to bring something home to my wife who is very vulnerable, I've declined to go. I didn't tell the person that invited me I'm not coming, but I just decided that this is one of those opportunities where I'm going to have to decline because I'm still trying to play it as safe as possible, even though I have been vaccinated. But there are people who have been vaccinated that have come down with COVID, and I'm in a very vulnerable situation, and so is my wife. So as you go out among your friends or family members, I'm not telling you don't go, but just be aware that it's still important to be cautious. So God bless everyone. Have a safe and happy holiday weekend, 4th of July weekend. And with that, we close, wishing everyone good night, and God bless you.